The Senate Education Committee to order for, what is it, the 17th of April in 2012. Thank you for waiting. We do have a quorum. We've had a couple of members that have to be in two or three places at once, so if they may be here or they may not be here for part of the discussion. I'd like to start. I think everybody is here from the board of the Minnesota State Academies, and so I'd like to start with them, and would ask them to come to the table. I believe that the superintendent is Linda Mitchell, is here. The two candidates are Martha Amundson and Sunny Wasilowski, and who is joined by interpreters, Lori Kraus and Heather Tilbert. So thank you very much. Who would like to begin?
I'd be happy to start.
Sunny Wasilowski.
Yes, that's me. You're right.
Go ahead.
I'm not quite sure what it is you'd like me to say, what the protocol is here. Do you want me to introduce myself and explain about, or what would you like?
I would like you to just introduce yourself, a little bit of whatever background you feel is appropriate to your the position to which you've been appointed.
All right. Thank you for explaining that, Senator Olson.
Yes,
again, my name is Sunny Wasilowski. I did write a letter to Governor Dayton previously when the governor was appointing me for this position, and I have graduated from the Minnesota State Academy for the Deaf myself. I did go to Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C. That's a liberal arts college primarily for deaf students. I did grow up here in Minnesota. I'm born and raised here in Minnesota. And I am a member of various deaf clubs and organizations throughout the state here. I've been part of various volunteer organizations. I've done some web management. I've been involved with the deaf school over time. And I have a large interest in the welfare of the deaf children and their education in the state of Minnesota. Especially now, I'm learning much more about the specific numbers that there are 2,400 deaf students throughout Minnesota from age 0 to 21. And currently we have about 140 deaf students at the State Academy. And so I think part of the reason I wanted to get on the board was really to help with the governance of that and to broaden some of what we do and make sure that we are looking out for students throughout the state of Minnesota as well as at the academy.
Very fine. Thank you very much. Are there any questions that any of the members have, Mr. Wasilowski? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to know if you have any particular concern that you think that the legislature should be addressing right now with this population.
Mr. Wasilowski.
Currently, I think it's money or finances, and that isn't always under our control, but obviously that's always a concern because we're having to, of course, do more with less. And we need to be serving the students we have now as well as look out for the future interests of deaf students throughout the state of Minnesota. And there's more and more mandates. And the Academy will soon be celebrating 150-year anniversary. And I believe that it is, I think, the first state agency, actually, as a deaf academy, because it was started in 1858.
Could you move the mic a little closer? Thank you.
And I don't know if you are aware that the Deaf School actually is considered a state agency here. And it was the first state agency that was ever authorized. And so it needs to be well maintained, especially with the building, and, you know, take care of the students well. And it's a specific focus of the legislature in that sense.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, Senator Torres-Ray. You've given us a good history lesson and perspective as to why this is important. Appreciate, since I was involved a bit in the change of governance, because they used to be under the State Board of Education, which was removed, I know there was a little angst there about that, but I think that it has been functioning quite well with its own board that can focus their attention on the specific needs of this population and the service that you're rendering. So thank you very much. Are there any other questions? If not, then Martha Amundson.
Good morning. I'm Marty Amundson. Most people call me Marty. I serve as the State Academy's Special Education Director representative, and I thank you for having me here today and for my reappointment to the board. This begins my fifth year on the board, and my term will be my second term. And I was elected as the board chair in January. I have been in special education for 30-some years, worked as a speech and language pathologist, and I'm currently a director of special education in the Minneapolis Public Schools. I grew up with a deaf mother who was post-lingually deaf, so she was oral. And so that's how I became interested in special education. And the Minnesota State Academy serves there's two schools, the State Academy for the Blind, which services probably about 58 students, and the State Academy for the Deaf is, like Sunny mentioned, has about 140 students. And so there's two campuses for the Minnesota State Academies, and very unique student population, and the services that are provided there. If you go on the virtual tour, you'll get a little bit of a flavor for the educational services and the residential services that are provided at those two state schools. I think that they are a phenomenal facility. Both campuses and the services that are provided at the state academies are, I think, exemplary. The staff are highly committed and very, very skilled and knowledgeable in those two disability areas, visually impaired and blind, and deaf and hard of hearing.
Have there been any changes? Now, this is your second term?
Yes.
Have you seen any changes in terms of the delivery of services, or changes in philosophy, or the numbers, or some of the things that you've witnessed as you've experienced this governance role?
I believe that the student population has remained very stable. The changes that I've seen over the several years, the technology that's required for education is, and staying up to date with that technology is a challenge for the state academies, for both the blind and visually impaired and the deaf and hard of hearing. And access for students with vision or low vision or blindness, and also students that are deaf, access to technology is one of the things that I believe that we need funding for and support. That's probably the biggest area, so that we can stay up to date and be able to quickly communicate and access educational information for students and staff both. That's probably the biggest change that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions of Ms. Amundson? Well, very good. You've been thorough, and I appreciate your presentations. Is there a motion to recommend to the full Senate the confirmation of both Martha Amundson and Sunny Wesolowski?
Madam Chair, I would move those recommendations, and in doing so would also thank both of you for your leadership and your presentations here this morning.
Okay, it's been moved that we recommend to the full Senate the confirmation of Martha Amundson and Sunny Wasilowski to the board of the Minnesota State Academies. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. So the confirmation recommendation goes forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe Mr. Mack, are you ready with the ones present that are here for the Board of State of the School Administrators? Mr. Mack.
Chair Olson and members of the committee, we are appreciative of the time this morning for you to present review two of our five candidates up for reappointment. Two of our candidates were able to attend. Three of our candidates, one is engaged in being a principal at St. Paul Central and needs to be there. One of our candidates is a teacher in math, preparing students for state assessments as they're doing their final approach to that. And one of our candidates is teaching at Hamline University with a commitment to students this morning. So we apologize for having only two of our five appointees being present. And I will defer to our two who attended and then be glad to answer additional questions.
Thank you. And we will, if there are questions of the three that aren't here, that I think you would probably be able to clarify any thing that's on the resumes. If not, we have both Penny Kodrick and Louise Sundin. And which of you would like to start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, as you might guess, am not an administrator myself, so I serve on the board as a public member. But Mrs. Kapler and I are both give a perspective of from being in the classroom, and we also have a school board member who is not up for this year. So we have a broad base of input into the guaranteeing that in the state of Minnesota, we have skilled, quality administrators both at the school site and in the superintendent's office. In this room, you've had many discussions, and it has come up often in this session and others about the absolute necessity of having good leadership in public education, and the Board of School Administrators takes very seriously our role in helping to guarantee that to the students and the families in Minnesota. So a couple of years ago, we completely redid the rule. We have rulemaking capacity if you empower us to do that. And in the future, we may be coming back to you as early as next session to ask again for the to be empowered to redo the rule again, because we have taken on a big project. And our project right at the moment is that we have sought and received foundation support to take a whole new look at the preparation, the licensure, and the induction of principals. And we think that as much as has been discussed here and nationally, we think that it does, it's an appropriate time, it's a propitious time for us to take another whole look at how principals are prepared, probably in a different way, probably in a much more extensive way, and then having possibly a tiered licensure system, and then once they get on the job, to follow them onto the job and find out and examine much more closely how well they're doing once they get on the job. So that's our big picture future project, and we're hoping that you'll Madam Chair will be interested enough to come back and hear how we do with that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for that. I was just reflecting as you were describing that project. Had an opportunity to meet with and have had some of the readings of a Professor Reed Lyon from down in Texas that has really kind of is grappled with and is working on a lot of professional development within the administrative, in particular the principals community, because of the importance. So many of the things that we talk about or the reforms that come along, they lose their steam if they're not implemented properly, and that is a key role of the administrator, of setting the framework and the climate for bringing about those kinds of changes. And they get real hands-on work with the kind of these kinds of issues with some of the things he's doing. I'm looking forward to getting more acquainted with that, but I'd encourage you to check that out as you begin your project, too. That's wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we are looking nationwide for models and for researchers, as you have said, because of the critical nature of that climate at the school site. And if you sit around and listen nationally to teachers about what is the most important or what prevents them from being the innovative and educators that they want to be, they often point to leadership. So that's why we are so concerned about having a role in improving the preparation, licensure, and induction.
And the other, to hitchhike on that, as we've been dealing with the teacher evaluation and principal evaluation, but teacher evaluation in particular, one of the apprehensions among the teaching ranks are how this will be handled by their administrator. And it's one of the reasons why I think that evaluation should come first and lead in it on the principals, because they need to understand how to effectively conduct that and have the trust. They need to be able to establish the trust that there's a fair process with the teachers, so that it isn't something to be feared, but something that can be a way of strengthening and improving everything that they do.
Madam Chair, I am on that task force also, so we're starting to work pretty hard on that. And I would be amiss if I didn't also say that Stan Mack, as our director, has helped us improve our service to principals and superintendents throughout the state many-fold. So his efficiency and his knowledge of the roles and his ability to be a really good administrator of the board and its responsibilities to the thousands of administrators across the state has really helped us improve our service.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions of Ms. Sundin? She's been a regular attendee at our meetings throughout this right. year, interested in a number of
reforms.
So thank you. And Ms. Kodrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Penny Kodrich, and this is my second term, originally appointed by Governor Pawlenty and reappointed by Governor Dayton. And I represent the school administration, the directors of special education. Most of my career has been in the Edina Public Schools and have held various committee positions, always working closely with the superintendent and the principals. And I do want to say that from a practical application in terms of the principal evaluation format, even though we've had goal setting for our administrators, we are looking at what has been provided as a model and intend on applying that within our own district, but not just for principals. We're also suggesting that because there are district office staff from community education directors and directors of teaching and learning and various others positions, depending on your school district, that we would also like to apply the same format, because we do see ourselves as critical components to the entire district and to the principals. We work hand in glove with each other, and so we're very appreciative of the work and grateful for our involvement relative and your involvement relative to the evaluation process So that has been applied within the district.
Great. Are there any questions of Ms. Kodrich? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question, just a general question, is how does your board look at the current process of kind of the higher education training of superintendents? There are several colleges and universities that have programs or have developed programs kind of on a mid-career type basis, because I think the decision to be in a superintendent's position is generally not something that you seek, you know, like at a while you're in college. It's more something that you develop into, like after you're a principal or after you're in administration of some sort. So how would you reflect on the current level of training? And I realize, Ms. Sudden, that you talked about looking at some national models, but how would you assess Minnesota's current position?
Mr. Mack.
Chair Olson and Senator Stump, right now the Board of School Administrators has approved formally 12 programs that license principals, and they're scattered throughout the state. There are two programs that are under consideration but are in their final stages of kind of compliance. The two initial programs are Concordia University St. Paul has applied and is nearing a complete approval process. And just a week ago, Monday and Tuesday, we were at an area of the state where it has been underserved, southwestern Minnesota. Southwest Minnesota State University has applied and is probably a year away from being fully compliant. There's a potential for their compliance earlier than that, but they have some pieces missing from what is required. We have a very comprehensive criteria for approving those programs. And yes, the vast majority of programs for training superintendents are ones that take mid-career, usually in combination with principal licensure, and taking individuals who have developed interest in doing school administrative training to a level. And I would say that the vast majority of individuals working in those programs are in their 30s, sometimes early 40s, going back to complete programs. They are not your traditional right out of baccalaureate degree graduate students, because we also have the requirement of 3 years of teaching experience and usually the expectation of some other work experiences within education that are not at either the principal or superintendent level prepare for that. So the traditional graduate school programs that are full-time programs with residencies almost do not exist. Virtually all of our individuals are trained while on the job, taking courses on a semester basis, usually completing their programs with summers in 2 to 3 to 4 years. And that ongoing training is also more than 50% now conducted not by university professors that are full-time professors, but the vast majority are practitioners as adjunct faculty. And so the currency of training for both principals, superintendents, and also special ed directors is at a far higher level. We recently did a site review for the University of Minnesota a year ago for reaccreditation, and members of the team came back, of which three of the five, six members of the team had completed their licensure program at the University of Minnesota back in the 1970s and 80s, and basically affirmed back to for the recommendation and letter to the university that the program today is much better than it was when they went through, because of the influence of adjunct faculty and the practitioners who know the day-to-day operation as opposed to only the theory. The theory is important, but the instruction from those who are practitioners as adjunct faculty have strengthened our programs throughout the state.
Madam Chair, may I also follow up?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf, the Board of School Administrators also has the responsibility to make judgment on persons, mid-career persons who are coming in from other kinds of work and other kinds of leadership on an alternative path. And I heard a little bit of that in your question. And I've worked with at least a couple of superintendents who have come through an alternative path and did not come through an administrative program. We did just this last week reject one, and we have two more that are in the process. It's a rigorous process. I think the jury's still out as far as the experience across the country as to whether the alternative path is a good one or what the former experience is as a leader really translates. But we have as our responsibility the making judgments on those who are coming in through an alternative path also.
Madam Chair, may I follow up to Senator Stump? As Stan said, there's not residency, but there are oftentimes internships that are required depending on the program, and that is usually a certain set time that a student needs to spend with a superintendent who may appoint different projects or different work duties and shadows the person. But it's not the same as a residency, I will grant you that, but many do have that type of internship.
Madam Chair, could I just ask a follow-up? Do you know the exact extent of retired superintendents that are coming back for whatever period of time? And does that reflect a shortage, or does that reflect a economic alternative for the district?
Madam Chair and Senator Stempf, I think it's probably a combination of both. The reality is that it is wise for school boards to wait for the more traditional July 1 hiring cycle. So when vacancies occur late in the hiring season or during the year, that retired interim superintendents are frequently appointed to fill those positions, and that works quite well. They don't then develop any long-term expectations or commitment for either the school board position or from the superintendent's position. But it also aids in the transition then to a good thoughtful superintendent search that goes on for a number of months through the process by, first of all, soliciting from the community, working with a selection of consultants that may aid them in doing that, but taking their time and not feeling rushed to do that, and yet having good continuity operating in the school district with an experienced retired superintendent. That is frequently the cause. There is another pattern that is occurring of individuals who have retired and kind of, as I refer to my situation, failed at retirement, and who have gone back and done other things, either directly working in education-related or in actual superintendencies. Who found that it was they enjoyed their work and wanted to return to the work. And there are a number of such individuals that are out around the state that are in that area. The superintendency pool is different than the principal pool. I should note that I believe we have a fairly high surplus of principal candidates in the state of Minnesota at the present time. When I look at the number of individuals who have obtained licensure for superintendency and have or for principalship and who are now renewing again for another two-year period because they do not have the experience requisite to move to a standard five-year license, that is a very large number. Our statistics that will be finished, that we're studying right now, that will be finished by about May 14th, would show that we did a sample of determining of principals who were trained 5 years ago, licensed 5 years ago in the state of Minnesota, and using STARS reporting data to compare their employment. And we're finding of those that were licensed 5 years ago, only 20% are actually working as principals in Minnesota. We expect that pattern to be at that level or maybe even less for those who were trained 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, or 1 year ago. And the fact that the pool of licensed principals will exceed demand, and part of that is driven by the change in economy, which has then delayed retirements of individuals who were anticipated to retire earlier in the cycle. And Superintendent, I would say that because of the number of vacancies and prepared individual for superintendencies, it's at balance or slightly short. The principalship is in surplus.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's kind of actually getting to one of my questions, and that has to do with the importance of principals and superintendents. And what we've seen, of course, is they're the leaders of the schools, and they set the culture in the school. And some of us at this table visited high-performing schools in December, and we saw that very clearly. The culture in the school that is definitely set by the principal. And one of the concerns I had was about the shortage that I know exists for superintendents, particularly, I think, in some of our larger settings, if I remember correctly. And the piece you mentioned about that so few, like about a fifth of our principals, are still in the in that career, in that profession, 5 years later, and I think we see that with our teachers too. But what I specifically wanted to ask you about was, and maybe it's too much for you to give today, but what type of things can we do in our state, or what type of things would be helpful that the legislature might be able to do to make sure that, one, we can get highly qualified superintendents in our schools, especially our larger schools. I know there's a shortage there. And then keep those principals that enter the principalship. You know, what is it that we might do that might be able to help us have a greater pool of highly qualified leaders, or keep those that have been trained?
Chair Olson and Senator Nelson, in response, I should clarify that that 20% number are those, many of those people, in fact, the majority of those people are working in public schools. They just have not had the opportunity to move into a principalship initially.
Okay.
It is not that they have come into the profession and have left, that they are still listed on the STARS report, but they're carrying on other duties. They might be in deanships. They might remain in teaching positions. They might be a coordinator of gifted talented in a district, or some other activity. But they are employed in Minnesota schools, but they are have not had the opportunity to be moved into a principal position. So it's not like they've come in and left. It is a handful might have, but the vast majority of those individuals are all individuals who have had that experience. As far as the issues I think that we face, the challenges, and it has both a plus side and somewhat a downside on the expectation of work for principals and superintendents. The focus, and I've been privileged to be on both the initial work of the partnership between the Elementary Secondary Principals Association, MASA, and the Board of School Administrators on an initial evaluation system, which you've received copies of, and also been a party to the legislative mandated principal evaluation process this year. And in fact, just yesterday I spent all day working on processes of what should be included in the training program for superintendents and principals to do evaluations of principals, because head principals evaluate assistant principals, but what should be in the training program to prepare quality evaluation using the new framework that has been presented to you. And so that process is a very heavy-duty one. In addition, the legislative mandate on teacher evaluation will increase the demand for principals and principal time. Several of our school districts across the state for the first time have expanded and increased their budgetary planning for next year, are increasing the number of licensed principals because of the anticipation of the need for universal evaluation of teachers. The demand for highly skilled, objective, prepared principals and superintendents will be greater than ever before. And that includes also special ed directors, because they assist and lead that for evaluation of special education teachers. So the demand on those three licensed areas for being better trained will continue to grow. The other piece of my responsibility is I receive 100% of all complaints in Code of Ethics allegation of violations against all Minnesota administrators. And there's a piece that I'm working with a number of agencies on and foundations on seeking assistance and our higher ed institutions on how can we expand our training in what I would call the soft skills of the principalship and the superintendency. That is bedside manner. Language, communication, those issues are the critical ones for success of principals and superintendents. And if you look at what is contained in our existing requirements for training the under state rule, mindset, attitude, and that soft skill of bedside manner is not one of those components. And I've become, after I've served now for 24 months in this position and have dealt with numerous issues, they don't rise to the threshold of causing license suspension or revocation. Mm-hmm. However, they are issues that are totally unnecessary, and that's part of what Board Member Louise Sundin mentioned on the whole issue of entry level. What do we need to do to potentially screen out and identify individuals who have a mindset to be able to deal with and handle what is the most latent, ambiguous set of work detail that anyone could ever have, and that's as a school administrator. And I've been invited by numerous training institutions to present issues on Code of Ethics, the Board of School Administrators, and mindset of how to avoid the pitfalls of falling into the complaint structure. And my focus is constantly on the issue of how do you prepare yourself with appropriate manners, communication skills, language, in order to be effective in dealing with who is your customer and, frankly, your stockholder, your taxpayer. That, to me, is the biggest single issue in pairing. 95% of the complaints that I receive and I take to the Ethics Committee are related to issues of communications, being more patient, how one handles individuals in crisis. Of course, parents with their children in school, that's the most important thing in their life, and they're most vulnerable in their issues regarding how their children are being served or handled. And that's why the development and strengthening in our competency preparation of soft skills, we have all the knowledge. We have a good deal of knowledge on dealing with assessment. We have lots of those hard skills, but the issues that relate to how you treat people and how you relate to people are the most critical. And those, just like in the medical profession sometimes and other professions, get left behind. Highly skilled individuals don't always attend to the soft skills. And if there's one mission that I hope to accomplish in my working with change in training programs will be the focus on pre-screening, pre-assistance, and training individuals to be prepared to deal with ambiguity and then to handle it in a manner that is of most appropriate means of communication with the customer, and I constantly use those words, the customer, the child, and the parent, and frankly also the stockholder, the taxpayer.
That's a challenge for school board members who are making decisions in hiring of superintendents. Absolutely. Also to recognize and try to screen for that as well. I appreciate it. Well said. Ms. Sundin.
Madam Chair, just one other quick response to Senator Nelson's good question, and that is that my colleague mentioned earlier the issue of residencies. We feel pretty strongly that an extended residency is the most quality way to induct not only teachers but also administrators. We used to have them much more prevalently, but they have gone by the wayside because of costs. But we're hoping to include that as a requirement in the sort of our new vision of induction and training. A whole year residency gives you all of the opportunities if you're with a very skilled mentor along the way to develop those skills that Director Mack just spoke to.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Mack, I noticed in the packet and I might be missing something, but there's a couple appointees who it looks like it says Denise Kapler and Mary McBee, who they're being resubmitted as a result of no one appointing anyone. And so I'm just wondering about their commitment and their dedication. And can you address that?
When the normal terms, Senator Olson and Senator Bonner, when the normal expiration of terms occurred, the positions were posted and they individually applied for the position. In Mary McBee's case, she is our most senior veteran and is presently the chair of the Board of School Administrators. Mary has been on the board since the creation in 2001 and was most interested in continuing on. Kim Hartung, I believe, was the other one you referred to.
Denise Kapler.
Yeah, they apply. Denise applied, and there was not another applicant for the position. But Denise is a very actively engaged teacher, but is continuous, very active member and participates actively and brings, as does Louise, that teacher perspective to the Board of School Administrators. And frankly, the composition is a very healthy one in the fact that each of the licensed areas governed is represented on the board, with principals having two seats, one for elementary principals and one for secondary principals, but otherwise superintendent, special ed director, community ed director are all represented along with two representatives from higher ed who do the instruction for our license programs, one in an administrative position and one in a teaching role.
Madam Chair.
Senator Romano.
Dr. Mack, thank you. That clarifies it. I just didn't want it to be a default position given the way that this was worded. So thank you very much.
Sure. That's good. Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mack, if I would like to ask you about the ethnic and racial representation, the diversity in the board. Is it your opinion, it says in the application, I think only Ms. McBee is African-American. Is your opinion that the board currently or in the past has reflected the student population, or are there any attempts to recruit and bring members with perspectives from those communities?
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, we have not done active recruitment. We have done the traditional posting, and we've had discussions with individuals. I have individually who are in varying positions. Because the positions are appointed by category, it narrows the field in each one of those categories to a selective group of individuals. If we have a vacancy for a university faculty member, we can only recruit in those areas. Our most recent true vacancy occurred with the most recent appointment of Kim Hartung to serve as the administrative college faculty representative, and that was as a result of not reapplication for Dr. Bruce Kramer, who is the dean of College of Education or higher ed at University of St. Thomas, and each of those cases we've had singular applicants for the position. When they were posted, we've given notice in the varying publications. Our standard for that that are the association publications that would recruit in those categories. But I think we could do a better job with that. Presently, we have only 10% minority representation with Principal McGee.
Thank you.
There's no further questions. I just have a little confession to make on a couple of counts. One, before I went astray into politics in graduate school, I had earned the credentials for both the secondary principal and superintendent, but never did apply them, and probably couldn't cut it today. So, but it's a I have great respect the other for what you're doing, and I would also comment that the Board of School Administrators is another outgrowth, along with the specialized board for the state academies, rather than having the state, when we abolished the State Board of Education, which, you know, had all of these things on their plate, and I think you've demonstrated to us, I think, the value of having a board with focus and being able to really keep on top of this and are reflective of the needs and the challenges because of the people that are participating. So, and I respect also the fact that you're working on, you know, looking at alternative pathways and trying to, but just keep your criteria strong so that we have quality people in these roles. And I'll also confess that I might have a slight bias to Ms. Kodrick because she lives in the same city that I do, and she graduated from the college that I spent my first year at before transferring to the University of Minnesota. Well, I'll try not to let that get too in the way too much. Ms. Sundin.
Madam Chair, I also want to thank you for your leadership and this body for helping us this session with some little language changes that we needed to be even more effective and efficient. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Olson, I had just two comments. One, I mentioned that for the last 2 years that I've served in this beginning March 31st of 2010, I succeeded at temporary retirement for about 6 months and came back to enjoy this work very much and finding a very valuable contribution to a part of the profession I had not really paid attention to, because when you're busy with superintendencies, you don't have a chance to really look at those aspects. But it is a dynamic organization, it's exciting, and the fact that I have a board very supportive of initiatives for change in bringing our administrative license structure up to 21st century standards really is exciting. We are also grateful, and Louise mentioned the foundation, the St. Paul Foundation, Minnesota Community Foundation, allowed me to write a grant to them that amounts to about $200,000 to do this national study of principals and what principal training should be like. And we will send invitations to you, and you may be through a session by that, but there'll be both our board and on May 14th and May 15th through the University Collaborative, which are representatives of all our training institutions, the results of that study. And it may be of interest to you and members of the committee to hear from the researchers what is the latest trend in principal training, and many of the changes that Louise outlined I expect to be in that report, as we've read many of the national studies that are encouraging change, particularly with a focus on attention to needs of disadvantaged students and working on the issue of leadership for closing the achievement gap, which is sorely needed in our schools. I also would like one personal note. I appreciate you being a little late on schedule. I was at 8:20. I was six blocks away, and I came to a yield, and a car hit me from behind, and I waited for 40 minutes for a St. Paul police officer to come by. We called, and so as I walked in 7 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour, most frustrated, I was appreciative of the fact that you had a late start and that the board for the academies was heard first. So thank you much.
Sometimes set at time is an advantage.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stubb.
Before you entertain a motion, maybe one suggestion would be, as you look at your duties next year, maybe you could offer a course on lobbying to the superintendents if we don't fare well this year.
Well, I was reflecting on your comment about the soft skills and being able to handle that. I think that's probably one training ground we get very well in the legislature, dealing with all kinds of people that kind of, you know, come in mad and try to see if you can drain that and get at what they really want and how you can be helpful to them. But anyway, it's been an interesting challenge at this end as well, and I value the experience that we've had and the wonderful people we've had a chance to work with, and all the diversity that it represents is part of what makes it really interesting. Is there anything more that you wish to say about the ones that aren't present before we have a motion to recommend?
Chair Olson, I was as an experienced superintendent of some 28 years in the superintendency, and having worked with many school boards before, I was a bit anxious about an appointed as opposed to a non-elected board and how that process worked. I'm blessed with all five of these members being just outstanding contributors, and in recognizing, other than reimbursement for mileage and those who travel across the state overnight accommodation, this board serves without stipend, without any reimbursement, and is so dedicated to their attendance that in snowstorms we do telephone connections so that we can have board members participate, and we have a very strong commitment on the part of our entire board. But each of the five appointees in front of you are outstanding contributors, and I've been really blessed for the last 2 years with absolute strong leadership that encourages me every day contribute greatly to the enhancement of licensed administrators in Minnesota. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Could we have a motion to recommend the confirmation of Penny Crowdridge, Louise Sundin, Kimberly Hartung, Denise Kapler, and Mary McAbee to the State Board of School Administrators? Senator Stumpf?
Madam Chair, I would so move that recommendation.
Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and we will forward that recommendation to the full Senate.
Senator Olson, just Dr. one Mack. Additional comment. I would also like to add to Louise's comments for thank you for your years of service. Having you being a legislator and part of my former school district and your contribution constantly to what is in best interest of educating children in Minnesota, you need to know how much that's appreciated. And it's always known that your heart was in caring about children, and we are most appreciative.
Thank you. You're very kind.
And we think maybe Senator Harrington's out checking on your accident. He just probably heard it.
Thank you so much.
Hope
thank
all
you.
Goes well.
Thank you God. Very much.
Thank you. And then we have the Board of the Perfect Center for Arts Education. And I think we've got kind of an accumulation, as in the other cases, too. We've got both appointees from Governor Pawlenty, and a number also from Governor Dayton. And I don't believe we have any of the appointees here today, or do we? One. Okay. But Ms. Mackert, the executive director, is here, and if you would like to introduce us or introduce us to the members, that anything you would like to say.
I would thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm very proud of the slate that is before you, in that we've worked very hard at the Perpich Center to create a board of mixed experience of individuals with corporate, finance, education, and government background, sometimes going outside of the traditional framework of education. And I'm pleased to serve as executive director of the Perpich Center and have with me the board chair, who is one of your appointees today, Todd Liljenquist. And I will turn it over to Todd to speak in terms of the board, and then would be happy to speak on those members who are not here.
Thank you. Mr. Liljenquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think
I'll... Can you
pull
that just a little closer to you?
Sure.
Thank you.
I think I'll start speaking about the board by way of introducing myself, I currently serve as board chair of the Perpich Center. My background, my degree is in music education and student taught, and decided that that was not where my life's work was going to be at that moment in my life, and pursued other avenues, and got into the corporate world, and still was involved in music and theater and things like that on the side, and I did what is the natural progression from a music education major, and I went to law school. And did that in 2006, and then graduated in 2006, and then since then I've been been general counsel and a lobbyist for a trade association, and I've worked with some of you here in that capacity. But my background is sort of indicative of the way the, at least as far as background experience is concerned, the broad base of board members on the Purpich Center. As Ms. Mackert stated, we have a number of individuals involved in finance, finance background. We have a college professor. We have a number of attorneys, four or five attorneys in private practice as well as in the public sector, small business owners, people with management experience. And what ties all of them together is either an interest or a direct involvement in the arts. And we all have a passion for the arts and for the work that Purpich is doing and the work that Sue and her management team and faculty and staff have done in her tenure. We have a very good board, and I've only been chair for a couple months, but I'm very proud to serve in that capacity.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to clarify here because we've had, I think you may have some information about a couple of candidates in your materials that are not on the list, or just one. I think Renee Hasbargen, I think, had resigned, so she is not being considered today. And there was at least one that I think the term was ended, and so I don't believe that Dr. Nelson's materials are in yours, but that was on an earlier list that we had. The names, Janine Carey and William Crutcher, Peter Adelson, Barry Amadeo, Stephen Daly, Ardith Gallant, Roberta Jones, Todd Lillenquist, Pierce McNally, Nancy Paddleford, and Alex Plekish are the ones that are being considered today. Senator Nelson?
I would just like to make a comment, and that is that one of the great things I really appreciate about the Purpich Center for the Arts, and that one of the things that I think is not very well known is how you reach out into outstate Minnesota and reach into our schools throughout the state. And I think that's an important piece to get out in the public record. And I think that's very important, especially today, as our education, we have so many demands on our educators in the school. So I want to thank you for that. And if there are no more questions, I'll be glad to make the motion that we
sure.
approve.
Are there... Senator Thomasoni?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I personally know Janine Carey very well, and she's typical of all the people that have been appointed to this board. She's got way more to do than she can stand, and so she's perfectly suited for it. And if you look through all of these resumes and you look and see what the experience and what community activities they've done and what professional experiences they have, and you find that they are very, very busy in their everyday life as well as being members of these boards. And it's I think there's an old saying, if you want something done, give it to somebody who's too busy to do it. And these these people are all kind of in that kind of mode there. So if you would like, I would be willing to move these names.
Yeah, I think that has been critical. Early on when this was proposed by Governor Purpich, I was not a fan of a residential school for the arts. I thought, tearing people away from families and that, and I think Senator Stumpf, I don't remember, had some reservations early on about it as well. But I think the role that they have played for providing an option is certainly very consistent with some of our concerns that not everyone learns in the same way or has the same kinds of passions, and yet, that focus on the arts actually enhances their abilities to tackle a lot of the academics and see their worth as well and be successful in it. And but part of my apprehension was one that caused me to put into that initial bill was that try to support some magnet type of endeavors around the state that would allow some specialization at some of the schools that would through open enrollment you know, people could benefit from that. And the Resource Center, I think, was also a very important part of this, of being able to help and enrich and strengthen the arts programs in all of our schools. And I think that the struggle goes on, as it does in other areas like career and technical education that Senator Stumpf and I have been doing, is that, you know, you get very heavy focus on the academics and the standards around them, and we sometimes lose sight of the importance of the other, whether it's applied learning or other kinds of enrichment that actually enhance our appreciation and ability to succeed in the academics as well. So I think you've been demonstrating that very well at the Purpich, and I'm more than happy to advocate for you, and I hope that, and I know that you've had some, you know, boards can always be challenging, but we learn from them as well, and it looks like you have a batch of good appointees here that are going to serve well or have been serving well, waiting for us to get around to doing the confirmation process, and I hope we can complete that now. So, Senator Nelson, or would like to make the motion, or were you?
I'd like to make a comment and a motion.
Okay.
The comment is you have put together a cracker jack team here as I've looked through these resumes. And Barry Amadio, of course, has been a former board chair who's done a fabulous job. And I just wanted to thank Ms. Mackert for her leadership in recruiting such fine individuals to carry this on. And it looks like we have a couple dueling motions. But
yes,
I
think you said you would like to intend to, but he actually made it, so I think we'll have to recognize that. Senator Bonhoff, you have come.
Yeah, just a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair, and congratulations, Todd, on your new board chair responsibility. That's very exciting. And I would also ask for you to give my regards to Peter Adolphson, who is a former state rep and lives right close to. He's actually in Senator Hand's district, but lives close to my home, and it's wonderful to see him continuing in that way, too.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Torsby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for either of you. I would like you to describe for me the ethnic and racial representation of the board members, and I would like to hear your opinion as to whether or not that representation actually reflects the student body.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray. We've worked very hard to have a board that is representative of not only our student body, but the K-12 schools throughout Minnesota. We have two members of the board who represent the African-American community. We have worked very hard to try to recruit other individuals. It isn't the easiest thing to do. I tried to recruit an individual in the Native American community, but he said we were too small. So we keep trying. It's very, very important to us, not only in representing the state of Minnesota, but also in because we represent art and culture that is so extremely important to reach into the full, diverse, and ethnic background of Minnesota. And we do it through our teaching and our learning, and we appreciate the leadership that we have on the board. But always, as most boards can and will continue to strive for full diversity.
Great. Thank you. Senator Tomasoni, you want to
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reflect on that because this is my I'm completing my sixth year in the Senate, and I have asked this question time and time again. Madam Chair, you probably remember that. And the answer has always been the same. It is very hard to do it, and we haven't been able to do it pretty much on every board, every committee that I have asked. And I do feel that next year, if I am back here in the Senate, one of my goals is to really have a hearing to reflect on kind of the challenges that many of these institutions face to recruit and appoint members that reflect the student population. I don't know how we can do it. I don't know how we can, you know, encourage communities and educate communities about the value of serving, because it's an amazing opportunity, and I thank you for the service you provide, Mr. Chair, because we know that this is not a paid position, and it's something that, you know, people volunteer to do, and because of your passion and your commitment to this issue, you do it. So we need to figure out a way to, you know, to encourage people in other communities to serve and participate with you. So I'm very committed to that issue, and I hope I can work with you on that.
Thank you, Senator Ray. I think that I don't think there has been any discouragement with the process that we have now, and it's rather hard to I'm not sure how you legislate doing that, but I think it's important for individuals that feel strongly about this working within their respective communities to encourage and build the self-confidence that there is and the fact that they can, in fact, serve, and this is a great opportunity, and encourage their application. That's hard. You know, I'm not sure that that's the legislator's role, but I think we have a chance to endorse and support those that come forward that can add to these boards. And I know that members of, as you said, you've been trying to work in that area as well. So thank you. Senator Tomasoni.
Well, Madam Chair, if it pleases the chair and if our rules allow, maybe you could make a co-motion with Senator Nelson and myself to move on.
Whatever, I think. Oh, yeah. I think she's happy to defer to you.
Okay.
So you, Senator Tomasoni moves that with the strong endorsement of Senator Nelson as well and others of us, the recommendation to confirm the appointments of Janine Carey, William Crutcher, Peter Adolfson, Barry Amadio. Is it Amadio or?
Amadio.
Stephen Daly, Ardith Gallant, Roberta Jones, Todd Lindquist, Pierce McNally, Nancy Paddleford, and Alex Plekish to the board of the Purpich Center for Arts Education. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The recommendation for confirmation will go forward to the full Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. And, Madam Chair, I believe that we may have an opening for a secondary school principal, just so you are aware. There is life after the Senate.
Well, I haven't been there, and I don't still carry the credential, so I'm past that stage. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Business is completed. The meeting is adjourned.